Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio, at the controls, shouldering even more of the load, like a reserve running back suddenly thrust into action. You know, and really, you know, I know I've mentioned this a couple times on the air already this week, Coach. Really appreciate the access that the Auburn sports media folks, the Auburn media relations folks have provided. Not just me, but a lot of other folks mm-hmm. in the who cover Auburn football this week, getting to talk to all 11 assistant coaches, getting right. to see most of another practice, and it's yep. the third or fourth one of the preseason we've gotten to see before even the second scrimmage.
Right.
Yeah, and it's just really, you know, it's made it a lot easier to formulate some opinions and, you know, be able to do more than just you know, guess based on pictures and videos, and you know, it's really been great, and I think, you know, it's helped me. You know, I've got some opinions about some players that I didn't necessarily have a couple of weeks ago about mm-hmm. about the way they could help the team this year. So yeah, really appreciate that. But it's the Friday edition of The Drive, wrapping up. How about this? Exactly 2 weeks before Auburn and Baylor, we are 2 weeks away from game day to start the 2025 season for the Auburn Tigers. You can catch that, of course, on Wings 94.3. I'm here in the studio with the coach, Don Dunn, who's, you know, it's the last weekend before classes start. I know it's bid day weekend. You got a lot of families in town helping folks move. Should be a busy night for you, I imagine, Coach. You'll be on the you'll be getting after it.
You can tell when everybody's back in town. Especially by the traffic. I almost got killed four or five times today. But, yeah, we should have a good weekend and a lot of parents in town.
This is our end of summer vacation bash
right.
today because yeah. it's – yeah, so that's why Coach has a pina colada over there. The last Friday before classes get started again.
Right. Monday
for the fall semester.
High school football next week.
High school football next week.
College zero, week zero.
And welcome to, you know, a whole bunch of new Auburn residents, right? Mm-hmm. Starting this weekend for the most part, and yeah, you know, hopefully you you know, it's you find your way okay, and like Coach was saying, be safe, everybody, because there is some serious traffic around the area, and we got some serious weather.
Yeah.
In the area.
Today rain, as well. Storms.
I was on the roads when some of that blew through, and it was tropical depression stuff that we had here earlier today briefly, and so yeah, just be alert, be aware. Let's check in with our buddy Bill Cameron, who's back in the home studio. How you feeling, Bill? How are things on your side of town?
It was pretty crazy how heavy the rain came down for a little while. So. That was crazy to see. Saw there were some flood watches and things yeah. like that because it rained a lot in a very brief period of time. But looks like it's blown on through because there were severe thunderstorm warnings that included hail and damaging winds, and we didn't get anything quite that bad out here.
And I know Coach Freeze, you know, wanted heat to try to simulate Waco, Texas.
Oh, he got heat for the scrimmage because they got things done early. That's about the only thing I know about the scrimmage is they got it all in before the rains came. But this is crazy. Remember last week there was just nothing, no information at all about the scrimmage. This week they're varying. I mean, just wildly varying reports on the scrimmage from today. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen anything from the scrimmage today. What have you heard?
Well, I mean, you know, you have your two major websites that cover Auburn. You know, the new On3 Rivals combo, and then 24/7, which used to be 24/7 and Scout. Remember, so you've had two that have combined, and I mean, they are just almost opposite in what they say about the scrimmage. I mean, and these are guys, you know, these are guys that we know and we work with and see all the time, but they're having to rely on some insiders that were at the scrimmage. So, I mean, I'm not saying that either one of the sites is wrong. It's just maybe the people watching
How about this, Bill? Maybe one of the sites is wrong, but we're in no position to tell you which one.
Yeah, absolutely.
How about that?
I sure can't tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine it was a pretty tight guest list for scrimmage number two.
Don't you know
Coach,
it.
You know, I mean, you're playing.
You're 2 weeks away. You don't want anybody there.
Yeah, so, I mean, so it's got to be, you know, they were, and they told us, you know, getting to talk to the assistant coach this week, they told us, you know, some of the goals, and I do think that the injuries to receiver probably threw a wrench into.
Oh yeah, because apparently all the guys that were questionable yesterday didn't go, with the exception of Cam Coleman. Cam played, but he also played with a yellow jersey, so he was just, you know, two-hand touch on Cam Coleman.
The thought that Cam Coleman was in a yellow jersey yesterday when they were in shorts and no shoulder pads, like, I was like, there's no way they're gonna do that, and then, like, If he's going to be full contact for the scrimmage, why put the jersey on him on Thursday for what was a pretty light day of practice, contact wise? And so it's not all that surprising that they're being careful with him. I thought there was virtually no chance of Singleton, right, based on the fact that he was, you know,
he didn't practice today, according to both reports.
Yeah, if he didn't participate I figured if you were a non-participant Thursday, you're probably not turning around a day later and playing in the scrimmage, especially if you're somebody who's like in the plans. And suddenly, and that's important, right, that suddenly on short notice, this offense is scrimmaging without Cam Coleman and Eric Singleton, who are, you know, two of the top receivers in the SEC going into the season and the top two receivers on the team throughout the preseason. So it's like that's got to be a sudden hurdle, right, a sudden pothole you have to swerve in the road getting ready for the trying to be your best in the scrimmage.
Yeah. Well. Anyway. So the report on the On3 Rivals site point, it says they went about 35 to 50 plays, whereas the report on 24/7 says it went longer than expected. So, I mean, you already get there, but
so we're already disagreeing about the
how long
how many plays even. Okay.
Well, see, that's the thing. Maybe the observer on the first one, maybe they took a break and the person left thinking, okay, it's over.
You got to be careful there, Bill. Not Justin Ferguson, a different observer, probably. That was.
Oh yes. I'm sorry. The viewer is
the
what
viewee.
The viewer, the insider. That was passing along information. Yes, yeah, I forgot completely about that. But yeah, from one site, the first team offense only scored one touchdown. It was hard to get first downs. On the other site, the defense had the upper hand early, but then the offense came on and scored. Cam Coleman had two touchdowns and nearly a third, and the offense pushed it in after that and pointed out another touchdown. So one says four touchdowns, the other one says one. They both say that the defensive line, Don, you'll like this, the defensive line dominated. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I did see also a report or a quote as I was just trying to scroll and see what different people were saying from insiders there at the scrimmage. This was not somebody that was there at the scrimmage. It was someone who was talking, said a former player told him this is the most impressive defensive line that he may have seen at Auburn in the last 20 years.
Wow. So, that is impressive.
So
that's good news.
That is. And that, I mean, The one report.
And that's a position, Bill. That's a position where Auburn still sent some players to the NFL over the last couple of years, right? I mean, you think Colby, who just graduated, came back and got his degree. Marcus Harris, Derek Hall. Like, there have been some recent pros. I mean, not to mention, of course, Derek Brown, Marlon Davidson from that 17-year. But to say this group looks as promising as any, like, that's – like, it's one thing to say the receivers look to be as promising as any in the last 25 years or so because, you know, that's been a position where things have been fairly up and down over the last 25 years for Auburn. I feel like defensive line's been a pretty consistent strength for Auburn over the last – 2 decades plus, and to say this group could be among the top tier of that is really saying something.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, no question. And a name that pops up on just about everybody's comments on the scrimmage today, once again, Amaris Williams said that he gave Xavier Chaplin fits today, that Chaplin just didn't have an answer for him. And this is, you know, Chaplin is a guy that the coaches seem pleased with thus far this spring. It's just sometimes, Don, if you have a great player, I mean, if you've got a great player matched up against a really good offensive lineman and he just keeps beating him, that doesn't necessarily mean the offensive lineman is terrible.
Exactly. That just means that the defensive lineman probably a better player and better athlete right now. And that's so positive to hear that today. And I've heard the same thing from a couple of guys I've talked to that – very impressed with the D-line, like the depth, like the young people, too. Mm-hmm. They're really stepping up. And we got to have them, man. It, offense, defensive line. And I think defensive line is probably more important, and that's very encouraging.
A couple of other points from both of the inside views and things like that. Nobody saw a turnover, so there wasn't a turnover in the scrimmage today. Again, the defensive line really played well. Sounded like the running game had a few plays. And one of the things that our buddy Jason Caldwell wrote is that Jeremiah Cobb really stepped up and he feels is pushing for the starting job. So that's really interesting. And that Omar Mabson had another strong day. He may be Auburn's best inside runner. It's not like he's just a plugger or anything, but Omar Mabson looks like he's working his way into a role come the Baylor game.
Yeah, I want to see what they do at running back in the Baylor game because, I mean, it still seems like, you know, they want to give opportunities to Damari and to Durrell. Cobb's role seems a little bit more fluid as far as he's going to be a running back, but maybe they have other plans for him as well, or maybe he's more of a specialist than an every down option. And then they've also got Omar, who's playing his way into, like you said, serious consideration for, you know, it's tough to game plan with four running backs, but I really want to see what they do at that position in early in the season, and especially in the Baylor game. And Bill, you know, for all the praise of the defensive line, is the offensive line still a group that feels under the gun come 2 weeks from tonight? Like, that's a group that, you know, when people ask me how the offensive line has performed in the preseason, I kind of shrug, right? Because it's like, I think they've been as advertised. I mean, Thornton seems pretty happy with them. We haven't seen that much full contact stuff between the offensive line and the defensive line. So a lot of it's sort of based on, what you're hearing, you know, reports and things like that. The one contrast between this year's offensive line and last year's offensive line in the preseason would be last year, you got the sense they were looking for answers elsewhere on the roster. They were trying out different combinations, potentially as the starting lineup. Percy Lewis was in and out of the starting lineup while they looked at Tyler Johnson.
Yeah, they look pretty set, is what it appears right now.
It seemed pretty set all preseason long, and I would say that's probably, Coach, my sense would be that what an offensive line coach is hoping for when he's brought in two new tackles and he's got three holdovers from last year one of the best things you could have at this point would be five guys who have been like to be settled as a starting unit and working together
right
for most if not all of the preseason.
Yeah, so important, like you said. The big thing on this O-line we've talked about is communication, making the right checks. The center's usually the captain of the O-line. He makes the calls. Then he's got to, you know, get with the, you know, how are you going to slide your protection? You know, all those things are so important. But you're right. Again, it's experience. The more you can work together as a unit, like you said, the top five and maybe roll one or two in, the better you're going to be, of course. I mean, we all know that.
And Bill, you know, we brought this up last week with Coach. I still, you know, if Amaris Williams breaks through this year, there are some similarities. I mean, we've seen some defensive linemen who took a year or two. And I just remember hearing about Stanley McGlover before actually seeing him on the field, remember? And it was like, this was a guy who, you know, there was talk of, oh, he's physically ready to go, but he, you know, it's mental and emotional and maybe academic too with Stanley, with Amaris. It was, you know, you heard Coach earlier this week say this was a guy who probably was physically ready to contribute, but dealing with the mental and emotional aspect of jumping up into the SEC was a lot for him last year, and he ended up redshirting and watching more football than he probably expected to.
Here's another guy that was he was a five-star.
Yeah.
On at least some of the sites, if not on every one.
And he's looked like
the talent is there. There's no question.
He's looked like a five-star all preseason. Like, he really has. Every time that group's working together, you can tell this is Keldrick too, obviously. But like, but even with Keldrick, I noticed it yesterday. They did a little bit of it the last time I was at practice too, where sometimes that whole group will be working on something and they've got Keldrick over doing something else. Like, it's almost like they know, like, okay, this is a group that all has some things to practice. Keldrick Falk is specializing and tuning and fine-tuning, and maybe they'll send a pass rusher. Sometimes Amaris will go over and work with him on something like that. But it's almost like he's got his own position and his own drills to work on with some Auburn coaches, because he's
a little help
advanced enough at some of the other stuff that maybe. Yeah, that's what they're working on. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial here in the Auburn-Opelika area. I believe we're dealing with some weather-related signal problems. I think
I got the craziest note from Scott, son.
I believe a few minutes ago. Yeah, I believe we're staticky in and out, but we're working on it at the tower, so we're still streaming. So you should be able to get us on ESPNAU.com, and the show will be available as a podcast after it's over. But part of that weather storm that we were talking about a little bit earlier in the segment seems to have interfered with our FM radio signal. So ESPN 106.7 is fighting through it right now. But we're still on the air, ESPNAU.com. Of course, you can catch that anywhere in the world. You got the data signal. You can get the show that way, and we're working on ESPN 106.7. So tune in, or keep it tuned in, or whatever. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. That's the Sky Bar. That's the Drive Hotline presented by our friends at Sky Bar. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more. You are listening to the Friday edition of The Drive.
ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Hour number one of the Friday edition of The Drive. Again, yeah, apologies for any sort of technical difficulties with the signal. We're working on it. It was it's weather related. But in the meantime, we're still streaming, and we're digesting the reports from that the scrimmage from different places. You know, Bill, I mentioned earlier in the show like the access to the preseason camps has had me sort of change my mind about a couple of players and how much they could maybe contribute. I think Chris Murray is on that list if you're looking at defensive guys. Just feels like you're seeing a lot.
That's a good thing because he's the only other experienced buck that Auburn has besides Keyron.
Right, and there's a belief that Keyron's a guy who can and maybe needs to take a step forward from he had in year one. I learned in my Chris Murray research that he made the Whataburger All-Texas team as a high school senior. I was unaware that there's a, like, kind of like the McDonald's All-American team. Whataburger has partnered with one of the
and all Texas high school teams, probably pretty talented bunch.
That's what I'm thinking, yes. Too, Bill. Yeah, like this guy's, yeah, he was all Texas in 2020, you know, before I think he ended up at TCU right, yep, out of high school. But he's a player that I'm curious. And then offensively, and I don't know, I don't know how much this is going to work between the 20s, but one second, I'm going to cough. You guys, Bill, is there a defensive player that comes to mind for you as someone that
I've mentioned it a few times. Jaquez Robinson is a guy that came in last year, had transferred in from Colorado, sort of, played at Alabama for 2 years, was a highly touted recruit out of Florida, that went to Alabama and then followed Charles Kelly Charles Kelly had recruited him to Alabama, followed Charles to Colorado, and then followed him from Colorado to Auburn and thought we'd probably see a lot of him. I don't know the reasons. You know, we don't know. Maybe he was banged up or something last year, but didn't see an awful lot of Jaquez last year except on some special teams. But he's a guy that's been out there playing a lot, and we've seen him work with the first and second units. I'm sure the Champ Anthony being brought along slowly is probably one of the reasons for that. But I think we're going to see Jaquez Robinson out there a good bit. And he's got a better number now anyway. Last year he was wearing number 30. I think he's what's he wearing, number 4 or 5 now?
Well, and if you're bringing Champ Anthony along slowly, is he going to be full speed for the opener?
That's a good question.
That's, I think that's something to, you know, that's something to wonder about as well. Now, I mean, now with the injuries to the receivers, there's some concern about are these guys going to be are they going to be full go, full speed for the Baylor game? You know, I feel like there are some obvious candidates to pick on offense. The two sort, and we talked about it a little bit yesterday with Ferg. I mean, it feels like every time a ball is thrown near Horatio Fields, he catches it.
Yeah.
And it's a different, like, I know folks are excited about Perry Thompson, but I would tell you right now, I would think that Horatio, even before the Perry injury stuff popped up, it felt like Horatio Fields was a guy they were trusting more than Perry to be that other outside receiver alongside, you know, you got Cam on one side, you know, either Perry or Horatio on the other side.
Well, I would think the way it starts early in the season is you're going to have Cam and Malcolm outside and Eric in the slot if you're just going three. But then, yeah, the next guy would either be Perry or Horatio as far as outside guys.
You know, I thought that going in too, Bill, but it does feel like they've used Eric and Malcolm a ton on the inside.
Well, and they have, but when they go three, it seems
right,
like those are the three.
But it does.
So one of them's going to move outside.
That's true. One of them would probably move outside, although they do seem to like – I mean, I guess we'll see how much they cross-train. Well, first, we'll see how much they use three. But then it's like – If they really like the look of either a Horatio or a Perry on the outside, then maybe I don't know. I think Singleton and Malcolm are both going to play both inside and outside. But
right,
I could see if they really like the Cam and another outside option, I could see Malcolm and Eric both being guys who are you know, primarily on the, you know, it depends on how they decide to divvy this up. Horatio Fields, I thought, was going to play less than it, you know, I'd say that's somebody who,
ooh,
over the last,
I thought he was going to play a lot, but he just, you know, he wasn't, it just wasn't as glitzy, you know, it didn't seem as showy or as big a deal when he signed.
But exactly.
I thought a guy that played as much as he did at Wake.
I thought he was an insurance policy when they got him and they're counting on some second year breakouts. And he's a lot more than that. Like he's someone who is ready to play a ton right now, and is just a tough matchup for defensive backs. He's big, he's strong, he's fast enough, he catches everything. By all accounts, he's a phenomenal blocker at the position. And coach, I think that's something, just like pass pro with running backs. Like, it's not the glitziest part of the job, but it matters a ton. Like, you're being able to be a reliable a reliable physical blocker at that position is something that can matter when you're deciding who gets playing time and who doesn't. And no, I just think Horatio Fields is somebody, especially in the red zone, who seems like he's going to be a really big part of this offense. And Bill, I did see in doing a little bit of browsing about the scrimmage, I think the services agreed that Brandon Frazier had a couple of plays, and that's a guy who we've seen more and more of. You know, a couple of the reporters thought he had his best day of practice yesterday.
Hopefully, he's healthy. I mean, I think that's really been the biggest thing holding him back for the last couple of years is just staying healthy, because he's got really soft hands for a big guy.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked at all to see Brandon Frazier, and you know, I wonder how much necessarily between the 20s, you know, he'll factor into the offense, but I could see him being a guy that they'd know and trust in the red zone as a, you know, both as a blocker and as a receiving target. And another guy who's a tough matchup, because he's a tough matchup for a different reason. He's 6'8" and can jump. And Jackson Arnold has shown an ability to throw those high point alley oops in practice. And Brandon Frazier would be he'd be an excellent candidate to receive a few of those potentially.
Yeah, so Jason said that he had a catch of over 30 yards in the scrimmage today.
Yeah, I mean, and I wonder how much of that was after the catch, and how much of that is he's 30 yards downfield and he wins a jump ball over a couple of overmatched defenders. But no, I think Frazier, and I don't want to sell any of the. I mean, look, I think Preston Howard is a guy that folks he's opened some eyes this preseason as well, and might be a guy who is more of a is a part of the offense between the 20s even more than Frazier. You know, we'll see, you know, as a receiving target, but I think Hugh Freeze had a plan for Brandon Frazier last year in the red zone, and the injuries disrupted it, and this year I wouldn't be shocked if he views Frazier as a viable target again. You know, a guy who's back for another year of college football, his final year of college football, and it would be great to see him get to cash in on more of those opportunities as a senior. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Bill, did we play Ken Austin?
No.
When we were we might run a little bit of that when we come back.
Yeah, we've got plenty of audio. That would be great.
Yeah, we have Chad Lunsford, we have Ken Austin, we've got some we got some really good stuff from the assistant coaches earlier in the week, so we can run some of that when we come back. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390 as the Drive Hotline presented by Skybar. Bill on the remote equipment from the home studio. Coach Don Dunn in the studio with us here. Dan Peck at the controls. We'll be back with more. This is The Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back.
I like the cowbell in that too.
Oh yeah, no, we got Blue Oyster Cult to come in and record that.
Oh yeah,
for Bruce actually. That's
more
the,
cowbell.
That's where the cowbell's
more
coming.
More cowbell.
You got Will Ferrell and the gang to come in and play that one. So
Christopher Walken.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know I guess I should have been less. Maybe it's me being oblivious because it happened in conversations that unfolded like right in front of me. But I'm so surprised to see the play calling thing like take on the life,
did you see Matt Hayes?
I know, and some of this is probably self-inflicted because they're being cagier than other coaching staffs about exactly what the deal is. But it's Hugh Freeze's offense, right? I mean, it is.
Go ahead.
I mean, he's the head coach. It's his side of the ball. I know he doesn't want to diminish anyone else's contributions to this, but it's his offense, and it should be.
Lest people forget, Lane Kiffin constantly is wanting to hear this type thing because they threatened to sue. Remember when Derek Nix left Ole Miss to come to Auburn because it was in his contract at Ole Miss that he could only leave for a position that, if it were not a head coaching position, for an offensive coordinator position, which was the primary play caller. So don't think that that doesn't factor into this as well. You know, if you see Hugh Freeze on the headset all the time and on every play, I think it's beneficial for him to say that Derek's also on the headset.
Is that still going on? The old Miss.
You think it's going to stop?
I mean the lawsuit aspect of it, is that still like an ongoing thing? The Derek.
Well,
Nix,
I think it's
Ole
think
Miss.
It's
I thought they had reached some sort of.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't realize
it's something
it was
that they're keeping, that Lane wants to keep open as a possibility. It is funny. I didn't read the John Goodman story, but it does seem that Lane keeps a very close eye on Hugh Freeze, doesn't it?
Well, I think Lane Kiffin knows that he knows his audience too. I mean, I think that besides the fact that it maybe plays,
but there are other coaches he could do some things with. But yeah. It seems like
what do you think?
His favorite.
Other coaches that used to coach at Ole Miss that he could do that to.
Well, that's true.
I mean, I think he knows his audience, and his audience is the Ole Miss decision makers and the Ole Miss fans. And he's
well, and there are some people that would tell you that Lane isn't thrilled that he wasn't offered the job, whether or not he would have taken it. Mm-hmm. That he wasn't offered the job that Hugh got at Auburn.
Wasn't the story that wasn't that the whole like daughter told him to turn it down?
That's
deal?
The story from Oxford.
Yeah, I thought that was. I mean, I don't know. Like,
there's some folks that are closer to Auburn that would beg to differ.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's I've yeah.
I don't know, but it is funny. It's a nice soap opera. There
I mean, no, I think
the,
yeah.
Don, you've been involved in those.
Yeah,
with Auburn and Ole Miss.
Oh boy, they don't like us when we leave. I still got some people after me. That's been 20-something years.
And I don't know how much of it's just Ole Miss when it comes to like folks wondering about this play calling stuff, but it's still.
Oh no, no.
I don't know. I mean, it seems to be at least partially because Hugh Freeze doesn't necessarily want to just stand up and say I'm the head coach and play caller, and maybe that's not the accurate way to describe what he is, but it seems like it's clearly his offense that Auburn is running, and it would make sense that he's ultimately making the final decisions.
Yeah, and I think he also wants to give credit to the other guys
yep.
who have so much input into the game plan and the plays that are going to be called. And that's where he, you know, credits that yep. Derek Nix has scouted up everything, and here are the different plays that they feel would work in certain situations against different looks on first down, and the same thing for Kent Austin on third down. That doesn't mean that, okay, it's your turn, you call this play, now it's my turn, and now it's your turn, and then we'll go back. What if we don't get to a third down, then it's just your turn and my turn? You know, no, that's not what this was meant to present, but I mean, people got to, you know, when you see something that's a little confusing, then I guess the immediate reaction is, well, it's crazy and that could never work.
Right, and hopefully, I mean, if I'm hoping things are smooth for this offense, and there are reasons why it wouldn't be early, right? Because you're talking about a new quarterback, you're talking about replacing a running back like Jarquez, you've got some tough opponents on the road in the first couple of weeks of the season. Like, there are reasons why this is an offense that, you know, in normal circumstances would need some time to find its identity, or would need some time to would benefit from being able to improve, but they don't have that luxury. They don't have the benefit of being able to be an offense that eventually finds its identity, because you got four really tough games in the first six of the season.
Oh yeah, and if things don't work, the offense sputters, then people are going to say, well, look, this is part of it. You know, the other thing, and this may be a bigger concern, it definitely is to me, than you know, who's inputting the plays, is the concerns that some folks have had. Look, Dan, you've been to practice a good bit this year. I mean, we've been to practice a lot since Hugh Freeze has been here, and he is all over the place. I mean, he is not just staying with the offense. He'll go over and spend time with all the positions, as you know, I mean, because he's the head coach. He wants to see what's going on everywhere. There are some concerns from people that because he's not there all the time and may not be able to be in all the quarterback meetings, that that he may not know everything that had gone on in the conversations between the quarterback coaches, the offensive coordinator, and the quarterbacks, and that may put him at a little bit of a disadvantage in calling the plays that are being, you know, that are being determined for each game.
You know, I think he is. I'll agree with some of that. Like he is bouncing around to different positions. Although he does seem to be, especially over the last week or so, he's been pretty offensive focused.
Yep.
When we're out there, like he's rarely that far from the quarterbacks. And usually when he's had like the most noteworthy interactions with the receivers, it's been in drills where they've been working with those quarterbacks. Like, so he's been like, Ken Austin is the quarterback's coach, and Ken Austin's been there for all of it. Hughes been in the, I mean, Hughes usually, if you're looking for him, in the vicinity of where the quarterbacks are working.
And I'm not as concerned as some people are that he wouldn't really, he would be in the dark as to what some of the other coaches. Yeah. Hard for me to believe that he's not going to be, he wouldn't spend extra time with Ken Austin or Derek Nix before he's going to, before they're going to go out and call a ball game and find out, you know, make sure he knows everything that's gone on all week. Look, let's face it, he's not like I don't think he is. When coaches' meetings are going on, I don't think he's out on the golf course. That's what some people would have you believe,
right?
You know?
And that's, you know, I would, you know what though, there are other people that would tell you that, like, if his strengths are as a recruiter and his weaknesses are in the game planning aspects, then maybe I think people are sort of reaching for storylines here when it's like, oh, look at just like the visor thing from yesterday taking off.
Oh my
off.
Goodness.
Yeah, I know.
That thing, I mean, I can't believe the reaction nationally.
Yeah.
From, oh, look at this. Look at a coach throw a visor in practice, Don.
I thought it was
Don,
great.
Don, that's about one of the lightweightest things I can recall.
I thought it was great. I was glad to see him do it.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. I told Dan off the air in the old days, lucky he didn't kick him in the butt.
I mean,
or throw a helmet at him.
Yeah, I mean, grab him by the face.
Not
mask.
Just a visor.
I don't know. I mean, I guess it's stuff that maybe drives clicks, right? Like, it's stuff that maybe you can use to, like, oh, see, this is evidence of a larger problem.
Right.
This is evidence of these are little.
Well, there's a chemistry problem.
Yeah,
there.
These are cracks in the foundation, and it's like, I don't think that's what this is. I think if Auburn, I think if Auburn is successful early, then a lot of the stuff that people spent a lot of ink and a lot of oxygen on this summer is going to seem really stupid, right? Like, I mean, he plays a lot of golf, can't recruit anymore. Like, he's
throwing his hat.
Yeah, and look at it. And if Auburn, look, mate, and is it possible that these are warning signs of the season Auburn's about to have? I mean,
I guess a lot's possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it feels like even if Auburn has a bad season, it's a stretch to use those as warning signs of, like, you know, what's about to happen. But no, I think the way you put it yesterday, Bill, where in talking about what happened with Jackson Arnold, Hugh Freeze has different expectations for this team. And with Jackson Arnold, he expects quick, correct decisions all the time. And when he doesn't, and you know what? I think Jackson Arnold expects to make quick, correct decisions all the time with the ball. And when that doesn't happen, Hugh Freeze is gonna get in there and offer some instruction. Yeah. Like, that's, I mean, and I think that's, I would, using that as evidence of a fracture, right? Or using that as evidence of, oh, well, this Auburn thing is trending in the wrong direction. You know, the ship's taking on water. I don't know.
I would encourage those. Yeah,
yeah.
I would encourage those folks to go watch. Like I said yesterday, to go watch any practice. And if there's never, if you never see a coach get upset, then I don't know what kind of practice you're watching.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it's, I mean, Some folks don't want to know how the sausage is made, Bill. Right? You know what I mean? Like they want to eat the hot dogs, but they don't want the tour of the hot dog factory necessarily to see see how it gets made. We'll run some audio if we have time, but I just want to talk about that a little bit because I know that was a thing that we've mentioned, and we've seen, and I think Harsin's second year was probably evidence of where it's like, oh man, there are some things that feel like that feel like problems that could grow into much bigger problems over the course of the year. I'm not really seeing those things, and I certainly don't see them in Hugh Freeze pulling Perry Thompson aside and telling him, you know, your effort in that last drill is not up to our standards, or telling Jackson Arnold, I think you could have hit that receiver, and the ball's got to be out faster, and you got to see and recognize it sooner. Like I don't necessarily see that as, oh, you know, this thing's I don't know. I still would look at it as a team that's in, you know, from a roster standpoint, probably as exciting as Auburn's had since the last time they won the SEC West, right? 2017, maybe 2018 was a preseason top 10 team. So maybe you got to go 18-19. The last time the roster was this exciting, but the fact is it's been years, and yeah, I don't think I certainly have not picked up on this you know they seem resigned to another subpar season, right? Like that's certainly not like the vibe I'm getting from being able to go to these practices and talk to these coaches, and even when competitive even when the juices overflow a little bit like that, like it's still not anything that suggests that this thing is broken. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. We got some audio from the coaches too that we'll try to run when we come back, but more coming up. This is The Drive. Production.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Coach Don Dunn hanging out with us. Bill on the home studio as Auburn gets ready to play just 2 weeks from today.
Yeah, how about it?
Auburn and Baylor kicking off the 2025 college football season. We are in the waning stretches of the offseason, Bill. Like this thing is, you know, thinking back to what, the day after Ohio State won the championship, you know, back in January, like the very start. I mean, Auburn's offseason started before that, obviously, but like, you know, that when the college football season was completely over, folks said it was, you're just going to be sort of, I mean, there were certainly within the Auburn program, there were folks just counting down the weeks until counting down the days until this team got another chance. And the Hugh Freeze era gets another opportunity. And
oh, yeah, no question about it. I
here
mean,
it
actually
is.
starting back in December with the signing class that Auburn had, then the transfers they were able to bring in, and all the guys that they got in that were able to go through the winter workouts and be out there for spring ball, only having six players on this entire team that weren't out there practicing this spring. Yeah, we've been counting them down, and today was the last big scrimmage Jason Caldwell writing, Auburn will have its final scrimmage of the preseason next Friday night, but it's basically going to be a dress rehearsal with the coaches practicing their communications from the sidelines, from upstairs to the sidelines, going through substitutions, special teams, and even have a pregame meal. So it's going to be the dress rehearsal for the game. It's not going to be a scrimmage along the lines that way it was today, where they're determining today, Don.
Yep.
Who's going to be not just making the trip, but I mean, who's in the game plan, who's there, and really the pecking order of that depth chart.
Yeah, today was an important day for a lot of the guys. They wanted to, you know, like you said, trying to finalize some things, especially with your twos and threes. And like you said, Bill, who maybe will travel, who won't travel, then the special teams guys. Yeah, so today was a big scrimmage, like you said, for everybody involved. Coaches, you know, going to have a good evaluation. They'll make some decisions. And you're right, next week will be a scripted dress rehearsal.
And we were talking about different positions where, you know, it seems like Auburn would, you know, if you were gonna trim down the rotations, if you were gonna get into try to narrow down how many players, how many contributors you were gonna have at different spots, it would be, you know, these would be the places to do it. I wonder how much clarity they got today, right? Like, I mean, it's you mentioned Omar Mampson. Like, I would think that clarity at the running back spot would have been a big game from Damari or Durrell, potentially, you know, putting a firmer grip on being the first guy up. Freshman feels like he's a wild card, you know, in here, and there's Jeremiah Cobb as well. So I think it stands that we're probably not going to know very much about the running game or the plan for Auburn at running back before we see them in action against Baylor, you know. And then the thought that you didn't have Cam or you didn't have Eric Singleton, and you had Cam Coleman very limited.
Right.
For this scrimmage,
and no Perry Thompson either,
and no Perry Thompson after the injury that kept him from participating too much yesterday as well. I mean, I would think that provides a chance to look even, you know, you get an even closer look at everyone else, right? And we'll see if that impacts.
And that could also limit your offense when, you know, and basically three of your top seven receivers aren't out there, you know, with no Eric Singh. I mean, some explosive playmakers not being out there with Singleton. And then Cam, apparently in limited duty, caught a couple of touchdowns. But that's pretty much, you know, he wasn't out there for the bulk of it.
Yeah, you can ask Jackson Arnold how taking away your top receivers can limit an offense,
yeah,
right? Like he's going,
oh no, not again.
Yeah, he's somebody who knows all too well, you know, how that can work after what happened at Oklahoma last year. So no, I think that's getting your key guys healthy and then figuring out who are your not just your key guys, but who are your next players up. You know, I would think coach is for an opener against a major conference opponent. Would you think that 2 weeks out, like you're in sort of game plan mode from here on, like after that second scrimmage,
right?
Like a lot of what you're doing isn't focusing on the season anymore. It's focusing on that opener.
Yeah, you'll start a lot more Baylor this week. Yeah, it's kind of like two seasons in preseason, if that makes sense. First couple of weeks is, you know, working on you, getting better. Competition, seeing who your guys are, and you know they know most of it. And then the next 2 weeks or the last 10 days is going to be strictly get ready for Baylor. You know, they'll spend a lot of time in the film. They've already done all the breakdowns. That's been done all summer. So they'll have everything. They'll script, you know, they'll work on first down, second down, third down, fourth down special teams on both offense and defense.
How about this, coach? When you are, and I know it's not necessarily the position you coach, but you were around football a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
When you've got multiple options at running back, what are some things that could be deciding factors in deciding how you're going to figure to use these guys?
Holding on to the football.
Yep.
If you're fumbling, you're not going to be the guy,
which has been a problem in games with Damari.
Yes, it has.
In his Auburn career. But we have not heard that fumbling has been a problem.
I have not heard anything this past.
We
two
haven't
weeks.
Heard about many turnovers
no,
at all.
I haven't heard about a lot of interceptions or fumbles.
But this would be a pivotal stretch to hold on to the football.
Oh yeah,
that would give them. You can't give them a reason to go with one of the other guys because there's too many.
Yeah.
There's too many other options in that room.
Right, yeah, but you're looking for a guy that can hold on to the ball. And the other thing we've talked about all 2 weeks, pass protection.
Yeah, see, it seems like that's where when you're deciding, when you're looking to the margins to decide, okay, am I going to go with player A or player B for this role? Feels like maybe the not very glamorous parts of the job,
yeah,
could start to factor in. For a running back, that's pass pro.
Right.
And I would think for a receiver, that could be blocking.
Yep.
Like that could be, all right, how effective is he in helping out the run game? And that's something that we heard, getting back to Horatio Fields. Yep. That's something you heard good stuff about with Horatio from Wake Forest, and that was something that we heard in the spring. Horatio was excelling at, and so that's,
and would block.
Yes,
there's a difference. Can and wood.
How about?
Yeah, you're not as willing. Willing to.
How about eager? Someone eager to
right,
go
right
and engage in that part of the engage in that part of the game.
And the third thing with the running back, can you catch the ball out of the backfield? On the flare pass, on the check down, on the RPOs, all those things. So number one is being able to hold on to the ball. Number two is pass blocking, and number three is route running.
I'll tell you the other thing,
catching.
The other thing that would probably matter a lot is availability. Your health, and that's one thing where you look at Omar, and compared to the other three guys, Damari was limited a little bit with I forget if it was lower body with Damari, what exactly it was. Cobb broke his finger was in the splint, was getting it wrapped, and even as recently as Monday was still getting some treatment on it. And then Darrell's got the turf toe. Yeah, Darrell missed the spring.
Turf toe is the one that I'm worried about the most.
Turf toe, I don't know how – look, that's a position. I don't know how you do it.
No.
I don't know how you do it healthy.
No.
But you start talking about foot and toe injuries.
Yeah.
And, look, you I'll be on the couch with 10% of that toe injury, and the thought that guy's going to try to play running back through it is just, that one is turf toe
sounds awful.
You know what, Bill? It's like it's more painful than it sounds, right?
Turf toes. No kidding.
Turf toes got
no
a
kidding.
Turf toes got that's a
makes me cringe.
It's an insider one for you listeners. Yeah. But no, Turf Toe is Turf Toe got a cutesy cartoonish nickname for just a horrific sounding injury.
Yeah. For sure.
So but it sounds like Darrell has been able to distance himself from the worst of that. And he's somebody who, they went out and got for a reason. Like, it's another guy you were talking about earlier with Chris Murray, Bill. Like, these are not players that you bring in because they're excellent at eating popcorn and watching football from the sideline. Like, these are guys you bring in, especially at this stage in the game. These are guys you bring in because you think they would fit in as contributors.
Oh yeah, you're not kidding. So it looks like they've done a good job. Everything leading up to now, this has been a more upbeat, and it's one of those where, a lot of times as you head into the season, you feel like you're going to have your little peaks and valleys and things like that. And obviously, Hugh Freeze talked last week or week before about, being disappointed with one day of practice. But that's pretty much been it. But you look out there and you can see that the talent is there. And they appear to be taking the coaching very well. Now I know there are a lot of fans right now that aren't thrilled that they aren't seeing more about the explosive offense, but I've never been considered the sunshine pumper or anything by any means.
Well, no, and I would.
But I think this defense has got a chance to be pretty darn good. They were a top 30 defense last year,
yeah.
And I think this has a chance to be definitely a step better than last year.
And I would point out to those people that we heard rave reports about Peyton's offseason last year. Peyton Thorne in last year's preseason was getting rave reviews every day from journalists, from folks who went to practice, from his coaches, from his teammates, right? And so he was on the bench after week two. And so after the Cal game.
Peyton was great. Peyton, there's no question. Peyton was great. In just drills and, when there's not a lot to be worried about as far as, right in front of you.
Right, and Peyton was a quality player at Michigan State, right? You know, won 10 games and played well at Auburn too. And my point wasn't necessarily about Peyton there. My point was like it doesn't necessarily translate to the season. While I understand why folks would like to be hearing that Jackson Arnold is sharp and super accurate every single day, right? Like every, you know, without any, like that's not the way it's gone this preseason. He's had some really impressive moments and quite a few of them, but it hasn't been nonstop.
I will say that today, I mean, nobody said Jackson didn't play well today.
Sure.
I mean, everyone says Jackson Arnold looked good, but boy, the offensive line, it was really tough for them to do anything because the offensive line had terrible difficulty trying to handle the defensive front.
And I think those are two spots where, you know, kind of like the running game, like we will see even if you hear good stuff over the next couple of weeks, like we'll see, you know, how it translates to the Baylor game on Friday. I mean, we've heard whether it was whether it was last year or, you know, going back to, I mean, I keep thinking about, maybe I'm traumatized by that game, Bill, but the 2017 Clemson game, right, where it just seemed like Auburn had figured out. I wasn't there. You were. But I did after the game though afterward for that one, so it's like I was there.
Yeah, I called in. Remember?
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. Yes, I remember. I remember quite a few of those calls.
We were on the way back to the car.
Scott and I were talking about a couple of those calls the other day, actually. But it's that offense seemed like it had everything figured out, right? And you went to Clemson and you played a really, really good team that made the 14 playoff that season. And it all went into a ditch. And so I think that it's like, even if you were hearing the right things out of preseason camp, you know, there's an exchange rate once you get into the season as to how much of this can be, like deadwood, right? How much of it's real and how much of it's fool's gold, right? Like how much of this is, how much of this is the real thing. And that's something that you're probably, even if everyone's saying the right thing, you're probably not going to know too much of that until you ring the bell and send the two teams out into the out of the center of the ring.
All right, if you want to run some audio,
you want to do a little bit, because I was going to ask about the pass rush and maybe we could run a little bit of the rock here at the end of the segment and talk about the pass rush when we come back. So we'll pick the field in 2025. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390, the number to dial here in the studio. A Drive Hotline presented by Skybar. We got Coach Don Dunn in the house as well. More Drive coming up when we come back. Stick around.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. Part of The Drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Hour number two of the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Coach Don Dunn in the studio. Bill beaming in from home. You know, we haven't really talked about the Michigan thing. I have absolutely no energy or bandwidth.
So it could cost them a lot of money.
Yeah.
More money than a national championship brought in? No.
Goodbye to the NCAA Division I Committee on Infractions. You know what I mean? Just like, I am excited.
I mean, no postseason. I mean, there's some show cause. Michigan's going to appeal. Whatever.
The dustbin of history, right, gets the NCAA Committee on Infractions in it, because now a lot of this is going to be CSC and move to a new sort of period of enforcement in college athletics. And I wonder the next time we'll hear about the NCAA Committee on Infractions. And I'm hoping the answer's never again.
I think there's a decent chance of that.
I'm hopeful it's never again. And so, you know, and they go out with an appropriate whimper, right? Like, as you know, this Michigan stuff, poor Jim Harbaugh will never coach again.
Yeah,
right?
He's got a 10-year show cause.
He's going to be run out of coaching, right? He's never going to accept that he's going to be an NFL coach for the next, you know, for as long as he wants to. And he's in his, mid-60s, right? So, I mean, who knows how much longer he wants to coach anyway.
I don't think that's going to be a big concern. Hey, I thought it's interesting. You were teasing as we went into break, talking about pass rush. Our buddy Brian Matthews, who will be on with us on Monday, got some info from, he says, from a source who reviewed the film. And the first thing he wrote was defensive pass rush was excellent. And he mentioned Kieron Crawford and Keldrick Falk, and we've already heard Amaris Williams. So sounds like there was pressure, under pressure were the Auburn quarterbacks. I think he pointed out that Jackson Arnold, he said, made good decisions on RPOs and connected with Cam Coleman on a touchdown. But on six true dropbacks, he was flushed all six times, but he didn't commit a turnover.
Under pressure, not just a Queen and David Bowie song on Wings 94.3. It's also, it's also maybe the story of Jackson Arnold's second scrimmage there at Auburn. And, yeah, I mean, with Keldrick and I think that Keldrick is the obvious answer. And, Coach, when you have a player who's going to get a lot of attention in the pass rush, when you have – I mean, you had Quentin. You had guys that were huge threats to rack up a great deal of sacks individually. It's imperative for the other guys to win their matchups because the attention that your star is going to
get. What's going to happen on the edge rusher? They're gonna chip with the back. You know, they're gonna get the offensive tackle and help with chipping. They call it with the back. You know, where he'll come and chip. So that guy's gonna get doubled. Your great ones. And you're exactly right. Somebody else better win the one-on-ones. It sounds like we have that going.
You can't double everybody.
Right.
Keldrick's going to get that attention.
Right. Now, you can bring a tight end, and all that, or a wing, but still, it's still a chip block. You know, there's going to be two-on-one. So you're exactly right. That sounds very positive if you've got two other guys that's getting mentioned.
Yeah.
Or three, really.
I mean, yeah, Kieron Crawford is, he's the guy who – he stepped in as Jalen McLeod's backup last year, transferred in, missed the spring last year, transferred in from Arkansas State.
Exactly.
Rock was just talking about him. He's, and just like Rivaldo, newer to football.
And Rock was also talking about how they could use, multiple guys. You definitely could have Keldrick inside, Amaris and Kieron as your two outside guys, and that gives you serious pass rush. And we're hearing that Auburn's getting a better push as far as pass rush from its interior than they had a year ago.
That's awesome. You get those two big guys inside pushing that pocket straight back. A quarterback does not like anything in front of him in his face. It's just something about it. If you get that push, then get your hands up and then have those guys off the edge and keep them in that box. That's awesome.
They're like racehorses, Coach.
Yeah. You got to get them blinders.
Get spooked.
And Brian's got something that I think a lot of Auburn fans will like hearing that said, even though the offensive line struggled in pass pro, they were much better in the run game, according to Brian, especially in goal line. Saying Damari had two touchdown runs and Omar Mabson in goal line situations.
That's something that Jake Thornton, when we talked to him on Monday, he really wanted to see the offensive line take a step forward in physicality, especially in the run game in the second scrimmage, especially the starters. And I would imagine, if they're able to open up some holes for Damari, that's probably a positive sign. You mentioned some of the pass rushing possibilities, Bill. Yeah, I mean, I think that they feel pretty good about, especially in an obvious passing down, a third and long, you could see Keldrick and Malik potentially as your inside options.
Yeah.
Malik Blockton, Malik Blockton was a very strong pass rushing interior defensive lineman last year. The thing that,
as a freshman.
As a true freshman out of Pike Road, Vaughn King Williams wanted him to work on his wants him to work on his ability to push guys back and sort of like he was swimming and doing technique at a really high level. It's a matter of starting to overpower some of these guys, and that's something that comes with age on the defensive line.
Yeah, he's going to get stronger,
and it sounds like he's gotten stronger from last year and could be a huge
part
of that.
He's 35 pounds heavier than when he came in.
Right.
a year ago, and he's about 15 pounds heavier than he played last year.
Right. And it's just the right kind of attitude. We heard Vaughn King Williams tell the story, Coach, where it's like, hey, Malik Blockton, like, we're bringing in a whole bunch of fourth and fifth year defensive linemen to sort of bridge the gap until you're more ready to play. Mm-hmm. And it didn't stop him at all from thinking he was going to play a lot last year. And he did.
Yeah.
Like the fact, you know,
And they'll get their, like I meant, I think I heard somebody mention rabbit package. You know, when you get your four best pass rushers on the field, mm-hmm. they'll have a name for it. Racehorse, rabbits.
I like racehorse.
Yeah, me too. Kentucky
I like
boy.
That thoroughbreds. Yeah.
No donkey ever won a Kentucky Derby.
No, man. It's about.
And my grandfather didn't say donkey.
He said 334-321-1390, the number to dial. I'll tell you what, though, we're going to reach out and call our good buddy Jake Crane at the when we come back for the final half hour of the show. Stick around. You are listening to the Friday edition of The Drive. Welcome back in Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio with the coach, Don Dunn, getting ready for a big night out on the barbecue.
Yeah.
And Don Dunn, we appreciate as always, you know, on a Friday. And
thank you.
Especially with Bill on the mend.
Yeah.
Still on the 15 day.
Yeah.
With
the, yeah, I hope it's just the. I hope it's a shorter. Just one of the shorter ones.
Just got you. Yeah, just got
I
you.
Don't
on
know.
The, might have to move you to the 60.
Don't want to go to the 60. No.
Hopefully, so Bill. Yeah, but it sounds like. We're on the road next week, too. Keep in mind next.
A week from today.
Next Friday, we're going to be part of that grand opening, for one of our exciting new sponsors, Winter Timber Outdoors. On the it's a near the neighborhood Walmart and the mall. On the line's going to be there as well. So yeah, excited to take the show on the road. I think we'll be on the road a little bit during football season, and this one gets us started. The first Friday of the school year, Friday of high school football.
Yeah.
So a lot of cool stuff next week, and we'll be on the road again for that. Just like the song. We'll be on the road again, and we are thrilled to welcome in on a Friday a very special guest here in hour number two. Someone we usually have on Tuesdays, but yeah, we rescheduled this week with some stuff going on, and we welcome in to break down an Auburn Baylor game that's just 2 weeks away, 2 weeks from tonight. Auburn and Baylor in Waco to kick off the 2025 season for both teams. And let's bring in Jake Crane from Crane and Company. Jake, I've said it a couple times this week. It's a fever pitch as the off season is just a little bit more sand in the hourglass of that 2025 off season.
Yeah, I mean, my body's ready at this point. It's been long enough. I'm ready to get into it. And I mean, now we're in basically the game planning phase of fall camp, where you kind of get out of that routine of what you've been doing, you know, going against each other. There's a lot more scout stuff, obviously, that people are going to start getting into this next week. But, Bill, I told you, you got to stop hanging out with Acuna Jr. so much, man.
Golly. Well, no, I don't go on it as often. But, you know, the problem is I don't think I'm going to be able to keep bouncing back as quickly as in the past.
Well, I hope you feel better, my friend. But no, I mean, Dan and you guys, I mean, I'm as excited as anybody. I actually think this year in college football, there's more teams that can win it than we've seen in a while, which should make it really, really intriguing. And it's going to be a fun year for sure.
Jake, I stumbled on a point earlier this week, and I'd love your thoughts on it, which is this Auburn offense. You know, if you could set the schedule aside. Like, there are reasons to think this is the kind of offense that would get better over the course of a season. You have a new quarterback. You have you're replacing Jarquez Hunter with a bunch of guys who haven't played a ton, haven't started a ton of games at Auburn. And even those receivers are still at a relatively young point in their career. Auburn is the kind of team where if they're sharp early, it could be trouble for some of the teams on their schedule, because there are, you know, this is the kind of team that would typically improve and maybe even improve considerably over the course of a season.
Yeah, but I mean, you guys know as I do, Auburn doesn't have time for it to just start working later in the year, in year three. But, I mean, if you don't have potential, then you really don't have anything. And if this Auburn team, from a chemistry standpoint with Jackson Arnold, from a rhythm standpoint, is able to catch fire early, then, yeah, I mean, the talent, I think, is through the roof. And it stops and starts with the offensive line. And I know there's some reports out of fall camp that, you know, the offensive line struggled one day and the defensive line struggled the next day, this, that, or the other. You want a good mix. But if Auburn's just able to go out there and execute, you know, it's one thing to have to go out there and play so well, and it's your only way to win a game against a quality team. If Auburn just goes out there and executes, they have guys of versatility out in space, 50-50 balls, running backs that are good enough to do it, where this offense could be really good. The name I keep hearing that I think Auburn fans need to watch out for a little bit is Preston Howard, kind of this flex Y tight end that they signed from Maryland. I've heard some really good things from people I trust about him. And if you know anything about offense and defense, if you've got a big body that can move in and out of breaks that you can put on at number three in trips, or you can put when you go in doubles and put him in the slot, it can create some big matchup problems in the middle of the field. You know, and that's the saddest part about Auburn not having too many weapons outside of Rivaldo Fairweather. He could have been that. But watch out for Preston Howard this year.
Yeah, and Auburn with their last really big scrimmage today, Jake, and word was that the defense once again had the upper hand. Defensive line apparently was creating havoc as far as pressure. And I know that has a lot of Auburn people going, oh, crap. Again, the offensive line's no good. The offense is going to stink. Maybe that's the case. But then maybe on the other hand, maybe this defense is going to be something pretty special. They weren't bad last year. They were a top 30 defense last year without the ability really to be able to go ahead and get to the quarterback. If they can do that, I think the talent on the defensive side. You were talking about the offensive talent. I really like the talent that DJ Durkin has to work with over on his side.
Well, I mean, Bill, one of the worries I had going into fall camp was the depth of the front seven of Auburn defensively, not just the D-line, but the linebackers. And it seems that, you know, it's not just the first guys that are going out there having success. It's the other guys, and it's contagious. You know, when your side of the ball is playing well, you send that second group in there, they don't want to let down. I mean, momentum's a real thing, even in inter-squad situations. And I'll be honest, I think Keldrick Faulk may be the best defensive lineman in the country by the end of this year. I would not be shocked at all if him and Anthony Hill Jr. were the two first defensive players taken. But again, you have to understand that Auburn's offense is not game planning against Auburn's defense.
Exactly.
I would probably still assume that even at this point in the scrimmages, and Coach can tell you, you're still running a lot of base stuff. Because we're not playing against Auburn's defense. Like, that's why I brought up the game planning point, that you're going to see teams start to get into a lot more scout periods as we get into this next week. I'll tell you this much. I would much rather Auburn be hell on that defensive line and that offensive line have to work against the best, some of the best they're going to face, so when they go out there and play Georgia and Bama and these other teams, they're not seeing a new level of ball.
And Jake, as I pointed out earlier in the show, we heard that the offense – had the advantage for quite a bit of last year's preseason, and it promptly hit a wall against Cal and Arkansas early in the season. So I think there's, you know,
Dan, here's the thing. Like, you can sit here from the outside and try and guess all you want. Mm-hmm. The only people that really know are the ones that are at practice every day that understand the play calls on the script that they're going against and truly know their personnel. Like, I mean, I've seen guys that were amazing in fall camp, and they're amazing in practice, and you throw them in a game, and they're a different dude. It's like with Jackson Arnold. You can tell me that Jackson Arnold had the greatest fall camp of any quarterback in the history of football, but until I see him go out there when the lights are on in Waco and go out there when the lights are on Saturdays in Jordan-Hare, I'm not going to sit here and just assume that this guy's figured it out. So you might as well not even – you can love it and follow it, and all that's great, but taking all these anecdotes from everything you see on the internet with one-play clips, you're wasting your time. We're going to know on Friday when they go to Baylor, and it was going to be like that regardless of who did well in fall camp.
Yeah, I find the fall camp viewing windows especially helpful as far as getting a picture of the depth chart. I'm not in a position to say, hey, this is why player A is getting more, you know, more than player B, and you know, is why they're
yeah,
you know,
well,
if they're
Dan,
in the battle for the third team.
If it was up to me, the media wouldn't even see Stretch.
Exactly.
And I'm in the media.
But we're
y'all
no,
wouldn't even get to see Stretch.
I love getting to go to these practices, Jake. Don't take that away from me.
No, well, I'm just saying that on the media side, I love the availability. But as a coach, if it was me, you're not, it's like Saban. You can live in those apartments, but you're not coming outside during practice, or you're evicted.
You're getting the blinders on. So, Jake, let's talk about the Baylor opponent that Auburn's got in a couple of weeks. I know you've done a little bit of digging into who Auburn is going to see in Waco. What are the strengths, weaknesses of Auburn's first opponent?
Well, you know, when you look at this Baylor team, and there's obviously matchups all over the field. Last year, Baylor turned it around in a way you wouldn't think a Dave Aranda team would. It was the offensive side that was the best side, and the defense wasn't great. When you look at what they have this year, Sawyer Robertson is a guy who's got a bunch of arm talent. He's got a pretty big arm. He's got enough wiggle to extend the play from inside the pocket and sometimes outside of the pocket. But where I think the biggest advantage Auburn has is on the edge of the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. Baylor's guard and center combo is really good on the offensive line, but they are very shaky at tackle. Very shaky at tackle. On their defensive side, they've got a nose that's a really good player, but they really don't have a ton of pass rushers that worry you. And this goes back to Chaplin and these guys having to see Falk in them every day. Then all of a sudden, the Mayer's kid's out there for Baylor, and you feel a lot better about it, and you give the quarterback some more time. That's where I think the biggest advantage is. And if Auburn can get to Sawyer, he will put the ball in harm's way. So yeah. I really, really like Auburn. And if you own the edge of the line of scrimmage, you really own the game. I would not be shocked at all if on the first series that you see Auburn out there, you get at least two jet sweeps from the guy in the slot, or they start out in 10 personnel, brush the back out to go empty, and run some power read stuff against what Baylor has in the middle. I think Auburn does have an advantage on the line of scrimmage, and they're going to press that early.
Talking with Jake Crane from Crane & Company here on the Friday edition of The Drive. And Jake, yeah, I mean, so for Auburn, I thought one of the it was an interesting development earlier in the week that a couple of the receivers, Cam Coleman, Eric Singleton, Perry Thompson, are dealing with nothing too troubling because they still had Cam in the non-contact jersey. Apparently, Cam participated in the scrimmage today with a lighter load.
Don't hit him hard.
Put the quarterback jersey on him. But that's something that, I mean, obviously you want those guys available for the actual game, but having to scrimmage without them could be. There could be some upside in it, both for Jackson and for those other receivers that get evaluated.
Yeah, I mean, listen, look, you treat everybody the same on the team as a coach, but there's some guys that you throw in the non-contact 2 weeks out of the first game. Look, Cam Coleman hasn't turned into what we think he's going to, but I'm pretty sure he's not going to forget here in the next 2 weeks. And then Eric Singleton, just for the love of everything sacred, just get this man on the bus or the plane to the game. You actually see this a decent amount in these scrimmages with older linemen, whether they be defensive linemen or offensive linemen, that, you know, you don't want to lose your first, second round left tackle pick a week and a half before the game. So, I'm not going to put any more stock into that other than, you know, sometimes you're a little bit more cautious with guys that, you know, you feel like you have a good idea about. But to your point, it is a great way to work depth, and it's a great way to work other guys with the first team because you can be running the same system, but there's a big difference in between that first-team quarterback and that rhythm and that second-team quarterback and that rhythm. And for Auburn, one's a righty and one's a lefty. And people may not think this is a big deal, but the ball spinning the other way can throw a receiver off. So you need as many reps with each one of those guys as possible. So, yeah, I think it's good building depth. I've got a good feeling that you're going to see Cam Coleman and Eric Singleton Jr. out there on that first team when the bullets start flying. And if it's me, I'd probably throw it to either one of those guys.
Great stuff, Jake. Tell folks how they can find the outstanding work that you and your team does.
Yeah, we got a big Auburn-Baylor preview. Easiest way to find us, if you listen to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, it's Crane & Company, C-R-A-I-N & Company. We're on YouTube as well, drop content all the time. Got our Auburn season prediction release that we just put out last week that you can find. So, yeah, man, it's time. Let's get it here. It's the best time of year, fellas.
Jake Crane from Crane & Company, really appreciate it. Great stuff. As always, Jake.
Appreciate it, Bill. Feel better, man.
Yeah, man. Have a great weekend.
Jake Crane joining us. Usually on Tuesdays, should have Jake back on the show this upcoming Tuesday, but happy to get a visit from Jake on a Friday before we wrap things up for the week. Stay tuned. You are listening to the Friday edition of The Drive.
River City Door Company understands your time is valuable. That's why they offer that two-hour service window. And when on their way, they're going to send you a picture of your tech.
.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Final few minutes of the Friday edition of The Drive, just 2 weeks away from Auburn and Baylor, which you can catch on Wings 94.3 here in the Auburn-Opelika area. We will have Andy and the gang, including new addition Brett Edens on the sideline. So that'll be a lot of fun, and that'll be getting started in just a couple of weeks. First episode of Tiger Talk is Monday on Wings 94.3. So we got a busy couple of days coming up, and hopefully folks are along for the ride, Bill.
Yeah, it's getting here. So don't forget, B-Matt, Brian Matthews, on with us Monday. We'll get his takes on what he's gleaned from the scrimmage today and more as we head into the countdown time for the start of the season.
All right, feel better, Bill. Hopefully you're back in the studio soon.
Hope so.
All right, very cool. We will we'll talk to you again very soon for Coach Don Dunn, who was here for most of the show, and for Jake Crane, who joined us. This is Dan Peck signing off. Talk to you on Monday. Good night.
Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.